From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week, my guest is Jesse Miller, bassist for the post-rock and live-tronica act Lotus. Since forming at Goshen College in Indiana more than a decade ago, Lotus has steadily worked its way up through the ranks of touring bands, defying genres and racking up plenty of miles along the way. They are one of the premier live electronic acts in the country and are just coming off a three-date East Coast swing with STS9. Lotus will be headlining the Liberate Music and Yoga Festival in Vermont this weekend, and they'll follow it up with two nights at their own festival, Summer Dance, at Nelson Ledge's Quarry Park in Ohio. Let's get to my interview with Jesse Miller of Lotus. I'd like to start at the beginning. Did you play instruments as a kid?
I took piano lessons when I was younger, and just for a few years, and you know, kind of got a little background on the theory, and you know, just got a little bit started. But I think it was more in high school when I started playing some guitar and eventually bass, and put together a band that really became more involved with music and started playing a lot more instruments.
What do you remember listening to?
You know, my parents didn't really have a very big musical collection, but I grew up in a church that had a lot of music, and they would sing four-part harmony, so kind of, you know, got some of the basics there. And then in high school, I listened to a lot of punk rock and ska music, and then really just started to get into all kinds of stuff, jazz to funk, and I guess later on was in high school was when I started to appreciate a little bit more complicated music and started to listen to more instrumental music.
Do you remember some of the first electronic music that you found and that first maybe influenced you and got you thinking about adding electronic instruments into your music?
I'd say early on, the Orb was definitely a big one. Back then, it was kind of the heyday of the rave scene, and more than anything, it just seemed like a culture rather than a type of music. And, mm-hmm. you know, electronic music was just starting to come over to the popular side. So I think it was kind of weird. Like, you would hear a lot of terrible, really poppy techno things, and it kind of turned me off to the whole genre. But then, you know, things like Daft Punk started popping up, and then the Orb really, with the whole idea of ambient electronics, really took me back then and showed me like all the things that you could do with electronics. And you know, this was before it wasn't simple to get into electronic music. You couldn't just grab a laptop and get rolling with it like you can today. I think a lot more inaccessible to your average person. So at first, for Lotus's music, we started off as much more, we did stuff that was dancey, but we were coming from it from more of a funk side. And then when we started toying around with using different beats from electronic music, and then over the years started to get gear and you know, knowledge that we were able to advance upon that and, you know, perform these things in a live setting.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. Can you tell me about sort of the genesis of Lotus? You were saying that you were listening to a lot of jazz and rock, and maybe that was where you're coming from, a lot of funk. That was what was at the core of maybe the band's early material?
Yeah, I mean, we were all over the place, really. I mean, we were just in college and listening to all kinds of different music. So early on, we would have some things that would have a very jazzy side, or some things would be more of like a Latin rock kind of thing. So I think, you know, we were very much what I think of as like a college jam band, just like trying out all kinds of different styles and really just trying to find our own voice.
Do you think it was a lot of your input that brought the electronic elements in, or was everyone sort of experimenting with maybe adding in produced beats or samples or things like that?
Not really. I mean, at first when we like I said, we started just incorporating different beats that were associated with electronic music, and we really didn't have any kind of, you know, really strictly two guitars, bass, and drums mm-hmm. lineup. At some point, Luke got a synthesizer, and we would start to incorporate that a little bit, but he was, at that point, you know, very limited on his ability on the keyboards. So it really started in slow, and then Chuck started playing with percussion with us in about 2001, and we got him this instrument called the Hansonic mm-hmm. that just is like an electronic percussion instrument. So we started adding in some different stuff through that, and then a few years later, I started using a sampler, and, you know, at first it was just very basic, just putting in some voiceover things, and I didn't really feel like when I first got it, I didn't really know, like, how to immediately put this to use. But then I think as that progressed and we started writing and recording music more from, not even necessarily from electronic side, but just being able, having, like, our own studio set up where we could produce sounds mm-hmm. and then being able to work that into composition and play it back, that kind of opened us more doors. I mean, the whole thing's been a really kind of slow progression of getting gear and learning how to use it and then writing for that and then bringing that back in and basically like maxing out the capabilities of any single piece of gear while continuing to expand on our ideas and then bringing all that back into a live setting.
Flowers Sermon from Lotus's free 2010 Live Selections album.
Tell me about your move to Psy Fidelity. You were on a smaller label at first, and then you sort of broke out in maybe the mid-2000s. Tell me about being signed to Psy Fidelity, what that meant, and how that changed, you know, the direction the band was headed in.
Honestly, I don't know if it really changed anything. I mean, we've pretty much been funding our own recording and really doing all aspects of our album production from the beginning. So I guess the move initially was just to hopefully get some more or different exposure. But just the way the scene has gone and just the tanking of album sales, album sales in our scene that were never even good to begin with. So it's kind of turned into a different thing. It's more of a marketing tool almost. I mean, I really believe in the album format.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue to produce albums, but we make almost zero money from selling albums. So it's not something we really depend on for our livelihood. It's more something that we create to make, I don't know, definitive versions and make great versions of compositions we've been working on. So for us, I don't really know how much a label affects or change anything, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I'm wondering, obviously you have this sort of artistic vision for how your albums are, even though they may not be, you know, necessarily important financially. What was the artistic message behind your double EP release from last year? You had Feather on Wood and then Oil on Glass.
Well, I kind of think of those two EPs and Hammer Strike all as one big project. As we recorded all the material at the same time and we're kind of working in this one particular mode for that. And that was approaching it as really more of a live rock record. Instead of being the album before that, we had produced it in more of a building it up piece by piece production style where we would record one thing, not even necessarily knowing what the next part was going to be. And this for Hammer Strike and and these two EPs. We set about to really have the songs written and record, usually live as a band, to tape, going kind of a more old school method. And so then after we put out Hammer Strike, we had a bunch of material left that needed some more work or didn't really fit on the Hammer Strike album. So we went back and reworked some of that and commissioned a few remixes, and those are what became those EPs. And they kind of, the material kind of fell out in two sides. It's more like a little bit more mellow mood, a little bit more organic instruments was the Feather on Wood, and then the Oil on Glass is a little bit more upbeat, a little dirtier kind of sound.
Okay. What's the next big Lotus release then? Are you looking to put out another live compilation, or is there another studio disc in the works?
Yeah, we're working on a studio album right now. We are close to being finished up with all the recording and overdubs. Me and Luke have just been doing a bunch of editing and some synth tracking over the last month. But we've got about, I'd say, 16 or 17 tracks pretty much in the bag, and we're ready to start mixing some of those. So we are hoping to have that released early 2011.
Gray Rig from last year's Lotus EP Oil on Glass. This is the UNS Podcast. My guest is Jesse Miller, bass player for Lotus.
Let's switch gears here for a minute and talk about your side project Ghost Dipper, which even in its relative infancy has created quite a buzz.
Yeah, Ghost Dipper is something we put together in, I guess it was January. Our drummer, Mike Greenfield, put together a show that was going to be a benefit for Haiti, and he wanted myself and Luke to play since we're the three guys from the band that live out here in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of viewed that as an opportunity to launch this project that, you know, we could do when Lotus is off the road and to kind of explore some different kind of styles of performance. So we, in about, I don't know, 2 weeks, put together a rough set and have expanded on it a little bit from there. I think we've played about 6 shows now. But basically, it's an opportunity for me to take some remixes that I've done and bring those into a live setting and, you know, kind of give them a different life outside of just a simple studio remix. And it's much more electronic, so I do a lot of keyboard and computer performance for Ghost Dipper, which is definitely a change of pace from Lotus, where I do a little bit of that, but I'm mostly just playing bass.
It seems like Ghost Dipper is a tribute to some of the most influential electronic music out there right now, the really new sounds that are coming out, dubstep and electro and some of the more progressive house. Who are some of the really groundbreaking artists that you've been hearing that have really been influencing you and pushing you to do these remixes and bring them out into the live setting?
For me, I'm not super into the dubstep genre, but there has been a few things that I've liked. We do a Banga cover with Ghost Dipper, and there was definitely some of his tracks I enjoyed. But for myself, I've been listening to a little bit more on the house side of things. I've been really getting into this guy Boy 8-Bit and Fake Blood. And, you know, a lot of it is not just single producers. It's more track by track. I think that's more true in electronic music than rock music. It's easier to find a certain track that you think is really great, but then you go and listen to the rest of the stuff by a given producer, and it's maybe not quite up to your taste. So
yeah,
I guess on the electronic side, those have been some of the things that I've been looking to recently. We'll be right back.
There's a live track from Ghost Stepper, a cover of Benga and Koki's Night. Let's wrap up my interview with Jesse Miller.
Lotus has two headlining spots right in a row. This weekend, there's the Liberate Music and Yoga Festival in Vermont, and then the following weekend, you've got your own festival in Ohio. First, tell me about the Liberate set that you're doing up in Vermont. It's supposed to be an extended set. What is your artistic purpose with this big extended set, your headlining spot at the Liberate Festival?
Usually in a situation like that where Lotus is given a headlining slot or the marquee slot of a festival, I think it does change up the approach a little bit, because a lot of times for festival sets, it's somewhere between a 60-minute and a 90-minute set. And, for those kind of sets, and if we're playing to a festival setting where there's likely to be a lot of people that have never heard the band before or aren't super familiar with Lotus' music, there's a certain set of songs that we always go to that we think are going to be heavy hitters and really just bring it home. Mm-hmm. So for a set like Liberate, I think if we have a bit more time, it gives us a little bit more time to develop some different stuff, like maybe bring the set down a little bit before we build it back up and just have a little bit more variety in the set.
Okay. And for your festival in Ohio, Summer Dance, how much control do you have over the lineup and the scheduling? What is your sort of influence on how things go down, or is it just your festival and name only?
Pretty much name only. I've tried to be involved with the lineup, but I haven't really been able to have any influence there. I mean, I like the artists that are playing. We've had, the last 3 years, it's been a lot of the same artists, and they kind of, I think they've carved out a cool thing. We got Iodo and Telepath, who are both good friends of ours and also great bands. And then you've got some great, local bands, or not local necessarily, but Ohio bands. I think there's the Papa Dojo, and I'm not sure who else is all playing this year, but they usually bring in a couple regional acts. Mm-hmm. And, some other stuff that definitely leans toward the electronic and dancey side of things. But, we'll see if it continues on. I definitely like to, try to just mix it up so it's not just the same artist year after year.
Sure.
Even though, I really like, I mean, last year, Yoda just killed it.
Yeah.
Before we played, so that was really fun. It's an interesting scene out there. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere in Ohio, so... but it's a cool setting.
The park is gorgeous.
Oh, you've been there before?
Yeah, I mean, the quarries, and you can take a dip in the water between sets, and it's breathtaking.
Yeah, and it's a really laid-back atmosphere, so it's cool to be able to do an event like that where most of the people are, coming to see Lotus, and they know what Lotus is all about, so they don't really feel like we need any musical introduction. We can just dive right into what we're doing.
Absolutely. And so when festival season wraps up in about a month or so, what's next for you and the band?
Well, we've got a big fall tour that's going to be announced maybe even before this airs. So that's coming out shortly. But we've got a little bit of time off in September, so I'm hoping to get everything wrapped up on the editing for this album and really start into mixing, and hopefully have that well on its way before we hit the road for a lengthy fall tour.
That's fantastic. Jesse Miller, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Thanks goes out to Brendan Pester with Opus One Productions, Luke Miller and Jimmy Calvarez for the Ghost Stepper track, and of course, my guest, Jesse Miller. Remember, Lotus is going to be headlining the Liberate Music and Yoga Festival up in Vermont this weekend, and then they have their own two-day shindig, Summer Dance, August 27th and 28th at Nelson Ledges Quarry Park in Ohio. Lotus has also announced a big fall tour. We've got dates on our website. Remember to visit theunz.com for news, artist profile, and those tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, contact me at anand@theunz.com. Catch you next week.